Hello, everyone. This is Zach, and you're listening to Explains on the Bitcoin Well podcast. This weekend, the Bitcoin network took a deep breath as mining difficulty saw a massive 7.76% drop, the second largest of the year. The biggest catalyst of which is some large miners moving to AI to become profitable during this Bitcoin bear market. While headlines mostly just talk about price, the real story is that Bitcoin is designed to shake off these kinds of massive shifts and just keep rolling as if nothing changed. Blocks continue to come out every 10 minutes regardless of how many new miners enter the space or how many miners shut down. So how does that work? If Bitcoin mining is just a bunch of computers guessing a basically random number, wouldn't the amount of guessers changing affect how fast they guess the number? And wouldn't that change how fast blocks and thus new Bitcoin are created? This all brings us to the topic of today's episode, one of the most beautiful and underappreciated aspects of Bitcoin, the difficulty adjustment. Using random chance and math to guarantee that each new block comes out in 10 minutes regardless of what happens in the Bitcoin mining market. So let's step out of the fear and anxiety of the daily news cycle and relax into some knowledge as we dive into the Bitcoin difficulty adjustment and the halving. Thanks for tuning in, and as always, please email me your questions, concerns, and feedback to z.adair@bitcoinwell.com. That's z.addair@bitcoinwell.com. Enjoy the show. In the last video, we established something important. Mining isn't really solving math. It's a global guessing game. Computers race to find a winning number, and the winner gets to write the next page of the ledger. And they get paid in brand new Bitcoin for doing it. Clean, simple, elegant. But here's where most explanations stop and where the really interesting questions start. Because if mining Bitcoin is profitable, and the price keeps going up, what stops every computer on Earth from switching to a Bitcoin miner at once? What stops Bitcoin from being mined out of new supply in a matter of weeks? What stops the supply from exploding just like every other commodity in history? The answer is two pieces of code that Satoshi Nakamoto quietly baked into the protocol from day one. And once you understand them, you'll understand why Bitcoin is the first genuinely scarce asset in human history. Let's start with a thought experiment. Imagine Bitcoin hits $1 million per coin. Not hard to imagine at this point. Well, what happens? Human nature kicks in. Suddenly, every data center, every garage, every warehouse with cheap electricity is spinning up mining rigs overnight. The computer power pointed at the Bitcoin network doubles again. Now here's the problem. Remember how mining works. Computers are guessing numbers, trying to find the one that meets the network's target. If you double the number of guessers, you find the answer twice as fast. If you 10x the guessers, you find it 10 times faster, which means instead of a new block every 10 minutes, you're getting a new block every 60 seconds. Why does that matter? Because Satoshi designed Bitcoin around a 10-minute block time, and that wasn't arbitrary. Faster blocks means network chaos. Too many miners finding blocks simultaneously. The chain becomes a mess. Slower blocks means terrible user experience. You're waiting an hour for the transaction to confirm. 10 minutes is the Goldilocks zone. Security and usability in balance. So how do you maintain a 10-minute schedule when you have no idea if there are 10 miners or 10 million miners playing the game? You build a thermostat. Every 2016 blocks, which works out roughly to 2 weeks, the Bitcoin network looks back at its own recent history. It asks a simple question.
Were blocks coming in faster or slower than 10 minutes? If faster, it raises the difficulty. The guessing game gets harder. Computers have to work more to find the answer. If slower, it lowers the difficulty. The puzzle gets easier, and miners can find blocks with less computing power. No human makes this call. No committee votes on it. No central bank adjusts the rate. The protocol does it automatically, every 2 weeks, like clockwork. Here's a stat that's kind of mind-blowing. Since 2009, the computing power on the Bitcoin network, the hash rate, has increased by roughly 65 million times. 65 million times more powerful than it was at launch. And through all of that growth, blocks still come in right around every 10 minutes. That is simply elegant engineering. The fiat system needs central bankers to manage the money supply. Bitcoin manages itself. All right, so now we know when the new Bitcoin gets issued. Every 10 minutes, stable, predictable, automatic. But how much gets issued? This is where Bitcoin separates itself from every monetary system that has ever existed. There will only ever be 21 million Bitcoin. That number is hard-coded into the protocol. Not a central bank promise or a policy target. Hard code. But Satoshi didn't just release all 21 million coins on day one. He programmed a release schedule every 210,000 blocks. Roughly every 4 years, the reward for mining a block gets cut in half. This is called the halving, or as we used to call it, the halvening. In 2009, miners earned 50 Bitcoin per block. That's how the first coins entered circulation. In 2012, that dropped to 25, then 12.5 in 2016, then 6.25 in 2020, then 3.125 in 2024. This keeps going until sometime around the year 2140, when the last fraction of a Bitcoin gets mined and the reward hits zero. Think about what this means from a supply perspective. 50% of all Bitcoin that will ever exist was mined in the first 4 years. The release rate has been slowing down ever since, and it keeps slowing down. The asset gets harder to produce over time, not easier. Compare that to gold. If the price of gold doubles, miners buy more excavators, dig deeper, flood the market with more supply. Higher demand creates more supply. The market corrects. This is actually a useful property for a commodity, but it means gold can never be truly mathematically scarce. There's always more in the ground. There's always more supply to unlock at the right price. Bitcoin doesn't work that way. Higher prices attract more miners. More miners run into the difficulty adjustment, and the difficulty goes up. The supply stays exactly the same, one block every 10 minutes. With a reward that only ever goes down. This is what people mean when they talk about Bitcoin stock to flow ratio. Stock is how much currently exists. Flow is how much the new supply enters the market each year. The higher the ratio, the harder the money. Gold has a high ratio. That's part of why it's held its value for thousands of years. Bitcoin's ratio already surpasses gold's. And after each halving, it gets higher. It is the hardest money ever created by design as a mathematical certainty. Now, I want to address the most common objection to this model. The argument goes like this. If the block reward keeps getting cut in half, eventually miners won't be profitable. Miners will turn off their machines. With fewer miners, the network becomes vulnerable. More miners quit. The network collapses. Bitcoin dies in what's called a death spiral. It's a neat theory. It's also wrong. Here's why. Remember the difficulty adjustment. If miners start turning off their machines because the reward isn't worth the electricity cost, what happens to block times? They slow down. Blocks start taking longer than 10 minutes. The network detects this and automatically lowers the difficulty. The puzzle gets easier. The number they're guessing gets easier. It becomes profitable again for the remaining miners. The difficulty adjustment isn't just a feature that keeps block time stable, it's Bitcoin's immune system. It makes the death spiral mathematically impossible. The network self-corrects every time. And what about the year 2040, when the block reward actually hits zero? What pays the miners then? Well, transaction fees. Every time someone sends Bitcoin, they attach a small fee to incentivize miners to include their transaction in the next block. Right now, the block subsidy is the dominant incentive. But as the subsidy shrinks over time, transaction fees grow to fill the gap. By 2140, Bitcoin will be a mature global monetary network processing enormous transaction volume. And because the halving process stretches this transition out over more than a century, it provides a massive runway. It isn't a sudden shock. It's a slow, predictable shift that gives miners plenty of time to adapt their business models. By the time that final fraction of a Bitcoin is mined, the fees alone will be more than enough to keep miners securing the chain. Let's bring it all together. The difficulty adjustment is the heartbeat. It keeps the rhythm stable no matter how much computing power joins the network. It cannot be gamed, bribed, or inflated away. The halving is the schedule. It creates a genuine mathematical scarcity. It makes Bitcoin harder money over time, automatically, without any human intervention. Together, they form a self-regulating monetary system unlike anything that has ever existed. No politicians setting rates, no central bankers printing emergency supply, no committee deciding what the money is worth, just code, math, and the free market. Mises wrote about the regression theorem, the idea that money derives its value from its history as a commodity. Bitcoin breaks that model entirely because its value doesn't come from history. It comes from the credibility of a future supply schedule that no one can change. Now, here's the question I want to leave with you. Miners run the computers. Miners process the transactions. Miners collect the rewards. So if miners have all that power, what stops a group of massive mining corporations from simply rewriting the code? What stops them from deleting the halving and giving themselves unlimited Bitcoin? If miners could change the rules, Bitcoin would be just as corruptible as the central banks it was designed to replace. But they can't, because the miners don't make the rules. In the next video, we're going to talk about nodes, what true decentralization actually looks like in practice, and we're going to tell the story of the block size wars of 2017, the moment the biggest corporations in the world tried to take over Bitcoin and the regular users crushed them. That one is worth waiting for. See you there.